Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of the Exploring Infinity podcast. My name is Advait, and I'm joined today by Siddharth and Shardul. We are a bunch of friends who spend a considerable amount of time discussing some of life's more deeper, intricate questions and problems. And in the process, touching upon a wide variety of topics in science, spirituality, society, consciousness. Well, you get the gist of it. We started this podcast with the simple aim of getting more people to join in on the conversation and discuss more of such topics. And ultimately, hopefully, enable them to chart their own path of exploration. But before we get started, we'll just introduce the three of us. So, Siddharth, who are you? You know, why are you here?
Hi, everyone. I'm Siddharth, and I'm an entrepreneur. I also work at an NGO, and I write music and poetry as well. But what has been present throughout my life is the fact that I've cared a lot about how reality functions and why anything exists at all, and this has shown through in various ways. But in general, I feel like I care about where humanity is going simply because I feel like reality is extremely fascinating, and it's very interesting that we're here. So yeah, I just feel like through this podcast we might be able to bring forth a lot more people who are maybe thinking about similar things, and we can have a much deeper conversation about life.
So, Shardul, what about you?
Hi, folks. I'm Shardul. I'm your average engineering graduate. I work at Cisco in server virtualization, and I solve problems in people's corporate networks. Sometimes, though, I allow my mind to indulge in some heavy psychology, philosophy, and science, often debating with myself on these topics. But now I feel like getting in more minds on the discussion. And this seems like a good outlet. What about you, Advait?
Well, I'm a wannabe entrepreneur and musician myself. And I guess one of the driving forces in my life is an intense curiosity about the nature of the reality that we live in and the nature of our mind and consciousness. I try to read anything and everything possible on the subject, and I love to have discussions with people around the same topics. And this podcast is a great avenue to find more people who are interested in the same things.
Okay, so in today's episode, we're going to be talking about how the three of us, independent from each other, came to question most of our conventional beliefs and value systems. Systems which have been created by our interactions with our families, friends, and society at large. We'll also be taking a closer look at how these beliefs and values come to be formed, and how big an impact they have on our overall happiness and satisfaction with life. We conclude by looking at ways in which an individual can try to break free from such systems and have a shot at discovering lasting happiness, independent of societal approvals. Okay, maybe we're promising too much, but let me have a crack at this. In my life, I don't think I had a particular moment at which I was awakened, so to say. But I feel like from a very young age in life, I question things a lot, so I'm not sure if genetics or very early upbringing itself contributed to this. But from our past conversations, I recall that this is not the same story for you guys. So, Advait, I think you had you can recall a more specific moment of awakening in a certain way.
I would definitely not call it awakening, but yeah, I guess for most of my life till probably around the age of 22. I'm 27 now. I was chasing things. You know, I was chasing good grades, chasing getting into the perfect engineering college, even chasing trying to get a girlfriend, landing my first job, etc., etc. And it always seemed like, you know, if I just get that one thing, if I just get that goal and achieve that goal, I would find happiness. And the goals would come. You'd get your good grades, you'd get your job, you'd get your promotion, but then the happiness would last a little bit, maybe a couple of days, maybe a week. You party it out, and then you come back to that feeling of emptiness and unease, right? And it just seemed like a cycle which would never, ever break, and it would just keep on. And I realized it was not just me who was facing the same dilemma. Most of my peers, most of my friends, I could see that they were also suffering with the state of affairs, you know, the state of affairs which pushes you to seek achievement after achievement and never ever feeling fully satisfied. And once you see it for the big hamster wheel that it is, you could never go back to that old state of affairs. So I slowly started to expand my awareness about alternate forms of being, you know, to explore sides of me which I never explored before, to go into subjects like Buddhism, meditation, and even different forms of music. Music has always been a huge part of me, but I'd always been very restricted in my tastes. I just explored that as well. And suddenly it could felt like there was a whole world opening up, you know, a whole world which could let you just be instead of forever seeking.
Yeah, I guess awakening is probably a very strong word, but I think it does have some merit. Personally, for me, in my life, I feel like I've projected myself a lot into the past and the future constantly. I would often run mental movies where I'm probably re-remembering things from the past, or I'm editing plans for the future in some minor or major way. I didn't really realize that I was doing it. And I guess in that sense, it is an awakening, because it resembles awakening because there's you're not aware of the fact that you're even doing it. And then there's some form of phase shift where you suddenly become aware of the fact that you're doing it. You may still continue to do these things and hence cause happiness to be somewhere far away, somewhere distant, anywhere but here. But at least you start noticing what you're doing and how your thoughts are actually causing that fact. But I think, Shardul, you've had a definitely more interesting upbringing, I would say, than mine. So I'm hoping your story differs at least a little bit.
Interesting upbringing. Yeah, I guess you could say that. The thing is, my family has always been pro-scientific inquiry and spiritual inquiry. My mom, dad, grandfather, and grandmother, I have always been able to have comfortable conversations with them about the strange questions that I wouldn't really be comfortable asking my friends about. Things like, do you see me the same way as I see you? Those things just used to raise eyebrows when I would drop them on someone like my best friend. But my family didn't find them strange. They would take them pretty positively and pretty comfortably and answer them in a very matter-of-fact way. Despite all this, or rather maybe because of all this, I have gained a habit, so as to say, of overthinking stuff. And in that sense, I've found myself, or I've been in the same boat as you in the past, where the way I call them is I make better versions of myself in the future, and I constantly compare my present self to them. Or they might be better versions of myself at the moment, but rather where I would have wanted to be. And so I would find myself dissatisfied with where I was. And like Advait mentioned, it always seems like happiness was delayed or was on the other side or with that better version of myself and not with me.
And what Siddharth had to say earlier about projecting into the future and the past is pretty relevant when you examine the reasons behind why happiness is on the other side. So we constantly, you know, keep worrying about what has happened in the past, something that we cannot change at all. And also we worry about an imaginary future, something which has not even happened yet. It seems pretty ridiculous when you think of it in that way, because all you have are a series of presents, a series of nows. I mean, I am channeling my inner Eckhart Tolle right now, but I do really believe that the true secret of happiness is actually in just being in the now, being in the present. Because if every moment that you live and you live happy, then your entire life is pretty much happy.
Well, now that Eckhart Tolle has been mentioned, I think we all love talking about The Power of Now, which is a book by Eckhart Tolle. But at least I've tried talking about it to a lot of people, and I've noticed that although I agree with what you're saying, and which is also a huge part of Eckhart Tolle's point, which is about the past and the future and how they don't really exist or matter in a certain sense. But I feel like most people don't really connect with that, because they're like, okay, we've spoken about all that, it sounds great, but I have to wake up tomorrow morning and I have to go to office and I have to at least plan this much and think about this and, you know, make sure I get what I want. And I think another way to approach that is really asking, what is it that you want? Because I don't think that's an easy question to answer either, because I've felt like, personally for me, it has changed a lot. And when discussing people like Elon Musk and, you know, other, let's say, accomplished people, it seems like even knowing what you want is a skill that has to be honed, like the way a craftsman hones his or her craft. And that is not at all easy, because to know what you want, you really need to know who you are. And I don't know how we can talk about things like that with any high level of confidence. So even if people feel like, hey, the future does exist and I need to worry about this stuff, do you people really know what to kind of worry about? Because I definitely don't.
That's a really interesting point you make there, Siddharth, about the ability of knowing what to worry about, of knowing where to go. And definitely it's aligned with having a goal in your mind and moving only towards that goal. That's definitely a very coveted skill, and I don't have it. I've always struggled with going towards a goal or even making a very solid goal. I also feel that like we were talking earlier about the process of projecting or making versions of yourself, these successful people also do those things. However, what happens in their case is they see the gap between themselves and their better versions, and it gives them drive to push themselves forward. Whereas on the other hand, what happens with simpletons like us is that we see the gap and we feel overwhelmed, because somehow we feel like we don't have the tools to bridge the gap, and we feel stuck and we can't move forward while also being dissatisfied by where we are.
A lot of people actually, I feel, do feel the same way. I've definitely felt the same way at different points in my life. The fact that, you know, how are these people doing it? How can I do the same thing? Can I do the same thing? And a lot of these things you just give up on after a point, you know. But over time, I've slowly started to realize that all these beliefs about ourselves, the fact that we can't do something, are very, you know, imaginary. I don't think there is an actual physical or an actual real barrier to us doing it. It's just a lot of, you could call it pattern matching with negative experiences in your past. You know, so our brain is always trying to match patterns, you know, trying to match our current experience with past experiences. It's definitely something which is very tough to let go of, but at least the first step would be to become aware of it and know that it's illusory and you can do pretty much anything you can put your mind to. At least that's what I believe. I don't know if you guys agree or not.
Maybe the reason certain people are able to convert that gap between expectations and reality into a certain type of drive, and also the fact that they're able to see that certain things are illusory and certain boundaries are illusory. Maybe the reasons are actually simpler. Maybe it's just the fact that we need to remember what really matters. And whether we believe in afterlife or whether we're like militant atheists, one thing for sure is that this particular conscious experience seems like it's going to end. And death is in to a great extent imminent. So I mean, if we really truly remembered at every moment that we and everyone we know are going to die, we'd probably not feel as worried. We'd probably be able to take bolder risks and maybe more risk towards things that seem to matter a little bit more, maybe in the longer term. So I've maybe it's just that we need to remember the basic truths of life, like the fact that, you know, we're all going to die.
our society definitely has a chronic fear of death in it. I mean, we tend to ignore it for as much as possible until it finally just creeps upon us. Similarly, one other thing that we don't pay much attention to is the importance of our own thoughts, you know, and how much impact that they have on our life, on our day-to-day actions, on pretty much our relationships, on our job, everything. One of the main benefits of meditation, which I personally gained, was the ability to just, you know, listen to my thoughts. And that's, it's very rare. And the first time I ever felt that, I think you had mentioned it earlier, Siddharth, it did feel like some sort of awakening. There is a voice in your head which is constantly chattering, constantly telling you things, and you don't even realize it's not you. It's actually not you. It's not your true self. And the day you finally, you know, listen to that voice, you realize how much bullshit we actually tell ourselves. It leads me to wonder, how did the voice in our head become like that? You know, what caused it to just have this torrential stream of noise going on all the time?
I think if we follow that train of thought, we'd probably have to conclude that probably an individual is not to blame as much for projecting happiness and kind of not knowing what he or she wants. Especially if you look at the first couple of decades of anyone's life, we're so heavily influenced by parents and society. In fact, I think we eventually become this dense product of our surroundings, and our own voice of our intrinsic desires is kind of muffled because of all, like you're saying, all the noise that is created by society. So we could probably say there are certain societal systems in place that are enforcing desire onto individuals.
Our mental perspective on just about everything is sort of conditioned by the psychological cave that we are in, which is heavily influenced, you're right, by society, friends, peers, family, etc. But society is, in fact, useful and is essential in order to, you know, help you learn the skills of survival, in order to, you know, put food on your plate, so to speak.
It's not that it's all bad, but if we are trying to kind of answer how happiness got onto the other side, I think it is important to address the fact that society's desires are so prevalent and enforced so strongly that on each of us, on average, we carry a lot of unnecessary, outdated and kind of impersonal baggage that's not really got too much to do with us. I mean, let's look at templates. We use templates in our life all the time, right? I mean, it may be as simple as a Microsoft Word template or whatever. But basically, templates are an efficient way to gain and transfer knowledge. So definitely it makes sense to have templates. But after a certain point, we kind of learn enough about our own desires and about the systems that generate these templates such that we can, you know, build our own. So in the beginning, yes, we adopt a template from society that this is how life works or this is how this particular aspect works. But after a while, we learn enough about the way those templates have been constructed that we can edit them so that we can make custom templates for our own life. And the reason it is important to do this is because society is pretty poor at updating these templates. Most of it was built on survival, probably in a very, brute force biological way, where back in the day you had to, let's say, you had to marry, your probability of passing on your genes was so much higher if you kind of formed very deep monoamorous relationships, whether it's marriage or whether it's some other form. But it may not be that useful at this point of time or in the future. So it's just about questioning those things and deciding, okay, I'm adopting these parts, I'm not adopting these parts. So in a larger sense, society is constantly imposing these blueprints for survival. But the truth is that we are kind of done surviving, and most of us can actually move on to thrive.
Survive or thrive. So as a society, we've got here because humans have been best, I would say, at surviving. They were at the top of the food chain because they developed systems so that they get more efficient at surviving. Before we started settling, we were hunter-gatherers. We used to hunt for food. We used to gather whatever we could find to eat. And survival then was literally, a game of life and death. If you didn't keep up, you simply died. But then we figured out how to grow food, and we started settling around places that are good for growing food. And that's how we made survival more efficient. And basically, these systems then kept evolving to in that direction of making survival more and more efficient. But now I feel like, and that's what you touched on earlier, is that we have got to a point where survival is not the top priority anymore. I mean, there's not only systems to keep you alive, but there's systems to keep you healthy, to keep you going, and, to make sure that you grow and develop exactly the way you want to.
While I would agree that societal systems can also liberate you and, essentially help you chart out your own way of living, I feel that these very same systems are also, partly to blame for the fact that happiness is on the other side. In two ways. One is the sort of unseen pressure that society, in the form of, like we mentioned before, parents, family, or friends, etc., sort of imposes on us to be in a certain way, to do certain things by certain ages, etc. All those pressures are unconsciously transferred onto us, and we tend to identify with them as our own goals, even though they're actually imposed on us through societal means. And in the modern age, technologies like social media, Facebook, Instagram, etc., also create so much pressure in our lives, to be a certain way, because you see all these ways in which people are living their lives, and unconsciously we immediately, that sort of pressure gets transferred onto us. And I feel that's also a huge impact that technology is having on the way society is run, and it's reinforcing society's downward pressure on our goals and our ways of being. Another thing that we don't usually realize, or which never comes to mainstream attention, is the fact that there's a huge amount of time, money, and effort being spent in creating systems which sort of dictate exactly how we live our lives, what we spend money on, who we fall in love with even. To give the example of Facebook, there are literally thousands of engineers who are paid to just figure out the perfect algorithm to ensure that you're, spending as much time as possible on your newsfeed, clicking on the correct ads, stuff like that. And these also, in the modern age, are contributing to the illusion that happiness is on the other side, because we are being constantly shown what we don't have, and we're being told that this is what you should have by these systems. Is there a way to break free from such systems? I'm not too sure. Maybe not. Shardul, you attained enlightenment last week. What can you tell us about this?
Yes, that's right, Advait. And I've also written a book on it. It's coming out soon. More updates on that later. I feel like we're too harsh on ourselves. Of course, we can use the idea of success and failure as a good reference framework for day-to-day function. But we shouldn't be so afraid of failure that we end up not acting on what matters to us.
Something which has helped me personally has been to just try to find my foundational reason for doing anything. And even though it took a lot of time, I think I've arrived at a stable base from which I can examine most of my decisions and most of my actions, my prime directive or my why, so to speak. And I feel understanding your personal why is very important if you want to break free from the goals that others have set for you, so that you can truly understand why you're doing any action that you're doing. Why are you going for higher education? Why are you going after this car? Or why are you going after this woman, etc.?
I think it's also important to remember that it's all just a game. If we're not afraid to be wrong and we have some working idea of what we want, and we're also mindful of the fact that in the end, we shouldn't take all of this too seriously, I think we'll do just fine.
I guess that sums it up pretty well. Thanks everyone for tuning in. If you have stuck around for this long, either you really liked it or the laptop's too far and you're too stoned to move. But either way, we're really grateful for your support. And if you want to stay updated for more episodes of the Exploring Infinity podcast, do join the Facebook group. You can search for Exploring Infinity. You can also subscribe on iTunes to the podcast as well. Thank you again. And signing off, this is Advait, Siddharth and Shardul from Exploring Infinity. Thank you.